Coming up on golf today, Lefty back in the news requesting a release from the PGA Tour to play in the LIV Golf opening event in London in June. He's also registered for the PGA and U.S. Open, but where will he actually tee it up? And world number two John Rahm in the field in Mexico this week. Let's call him the headliner as he tries to win for the first time in nearly a year and get some heat on the greens. And from JR to Patty T, we keep the Pac-12 theme going as UCLA Bruin and major champ Patty Tavitanigan hops on to talk her playing lesson with Bones and this week's Palos Verdes Championship. Golf, golf, and more golf on Golf Today.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
And a good Tuesday to you. This is Golf Today. Damon Ack alongside Eamon Lynch. We've got golf in Mexico, golf in Southern California. But yeah, we've also got some news to talk about. It's not just a sleepy Tuesday.
No, it really isn't, Damon. Just when you think you're about to actually be able to start talking about life inside the ropes in professional golf now, they still drag you back outside for all of the drama and politics that seems to follow Phil Mickelson around wherever he goes these days.
It was the story at the end of 2021. It seems to be the story at the start of 2022. Let's get the folks at home caught up on the latest on the World Golf Hall of Fame member and six-time major champ Phil Mickelson, registered for two upcoming major championships, but a request has been also filed on his behalf to compete in the LIV Golf Opener. This is according to Mickelson's longtime agent Steve Loy, who provided a statement via email to golfchannel.com on Monday afternoon. He's the second confirmed player to be seeking such a release, following Robert Garrigues, who told golfchannel.com last week at the Zurich Classic. So this is Steve Loy's statement on Phil. Our client is officially registered to play in the PGA Championship, will be defending, as well as the U.S. Open. We have also filed a request on his behalf for a release to play in the first LIV Golf Invitational in London, June 9th through the 11th. This request complies with the deadline of April 25th set forth by the PGA Tour to compete in a conflicting PGA Tour event. Phil currently has no concrete plans on when and where he will play. Any actions taken are in no way a reflection of a final decision made, but rather to keep all options made. And a recent timeline, it's been a busy one, not much production on the golf course. Phil missed the cut at the Farmers in January, his last PGA Tour appearance, and he competed at the Saudi International, where he finished tied for 18th. In February 17th, those comments from a November interview with Alan Shipnuck were made public, where he said the Saudis are scary M's to get involved with. Opportunity to reshape how the PGA Tour operates, being too good to pass up. Then February 22nd, issued a statement apologizing for his previous comments, saying the comments were reckless, that he needs to take some time away to work on being the man I want to be. Then in April, does not compete the Masters for the first time in 28 years. Then April 25th, that's yesterday, issuing the statement that he registered for May's PGA and June's U.S. Open and requested that release from the tour to play in the first event on the LIV Golf Invitational Series. Eamon, so these three events, the PGA, the U.S. Open, and the LIV Golf Opener, why these three events in your mind? Why are they kind of put together here?
Maybe there are Phil's three majors, Damon. And to be clear for people at home, the LIV Golf event is the event financed by the Saudi Arabian government that has been sort of prowling around the perimeters of the PGA and European Tour for the last couple of years. And we already knew about the U.S. Open because Phil was required to file his registration to play in that event 2 weeks ago. So we can sort of discard that now. Why are the other two together? Both of them had deadlines of yesterday,
right,
to signal his intent. And Phil is the defending champion at the PGA Championship, but he still had to register to compete. He couldn't just show up at Southern Hills in a few weeks. And yesterday was also the deadline by which he had to request a release from the PGA Tour to get permission to go play the Saudi event in London, should he choose to do so, in early June. So you could actually say, in a charitable view of it, that it's merely logistics, that he's keeping his options open depending on what direction he actually chooses to go. What that direction is, Damon, is still very much unclear at this point, but I think him raising his hand yesterday and saying that he's requested the release for the Saudi event, which none of the other players who have done so have actually had the courage to do. They're kind of skulking around in the dark, embarrassed, as they should be, But none of them have actually put their hand up and said that they have applied for this release. And the deadline for it to be granted by the tour or denied is May 10th. But I think Phil doing this has two effects. And I think they're deliberate. I think the intent is to elevate the Saudi event in stature because it was subject to so much mockery last week when it was revealed that Robert Garrigus, well outside the top 1,000 in the world, was the only player who put his hand up and said, I would like to play in this event. So I think Phil throwing his name into the hat somewhat tries to elevate it.
And it does also it? Does it elevate it? Does it change the conversation that the great white shark in Greg Norman now has a decorated World Golf Hall of Fame member, one of the most recognizable golfers ever to play this game, raising his hand and saying, I want a release from the PGA Tour? Does it legitimize this operation
more? It doesn't legitimize it, but it puts some lipstick on the pig, really, is what we're doing here. And Phil is obviously a huge brand name in this game. And by doing so and putting himself out there, he achieves his other objective, which I think is giving air cover to anyone who may come behind him and put their hand up. Because, you know, Phil's not out there every week right now. He's in seclusion. He can take more shots and criticism for this, save other guys from doing the same, and they all get to show up in London and compete for the Saudi money several months from now. I think that's probably an ancillary objective of Phil's here, but it would suggest that the use of the PGA Championship as a fig leaf to cover that objective wouldn't be well received by folks at the PGA of America, but that's the more uncharitable reading of it. But at the very basic, it's a logistical issue here where whatever direction he's going, he's leaving his options open.
Any surprise that in that statement that we just had a couple months ago, it was Phil saying, I need to take time away and be the man that I want to be, and we hadn't heard from him. Two things strike me. One, that was released by his agent, Steve Loy. Phil Mickelson has been very vocal throughout his career and in his last incarnation as a social media star, kind of TikToking his way through life as nearly an untouchable. But now we have this news yesterday, and it's like he's back in the same place seemingly that he was 2 months ago.
He really is. And he's playing this waiting game of which way is he going to go. It's kind of a little Hamlet routine. Is he going with the Saudis, or is he staying with the PGA Tour or coming back to play major championships on the PGA Tour? And it's still worth noting that in the apology that Phil Mickelson released 2 months ago, the only people to whom he apologised were the people he told the truth about, which was the Saudis, when he referred to them as murderers and human rights abusers and other more colourful terminology that he used for them. He didn't offer apologies to certainly any of his colleagues on the PGA Tour, and I know there are players on the PGA Tour who say Phil has not been suspended and they wish he had been sanctioned in some way. And Phil acknowledged in that statement that he has actually been working with the Saudis. He made no bones about that. He referred to them as visionaries with a great idea for a product that's going to be better for fans and the entire golf world. So the idea that Phil is not already allied with the Saudis is fanciful. He is. He has been for months. He was recruiting for them, and he acknowledged as much in his statement. So it's not a surprise that Phil would throw his name into the hat to play this first Saudi event in London. The question is he going to emerge to do that, or is he going to remain in seclusion until then?
Yeah, this story has been going on seemingly for months and months, yet in some ways it still feels like we're at the beginning. What are some markers, some dates that we should pay attention to going forward as this story continues to evolve?
I think the DMZ here, the red line that Jay Monahan has to draw, is June 1st. Because this is the first Saudi event in London. It's a distraction. It might as well be another version of the Saudi International played in the King Abdullah Economic City back in February. It's the same precedent has been set by the tour. They've permitted players to go on overseas money grabs before. I suspect they will do it again. They're not going to choose to go to war over an event in London. The second Saudi event is scheduled July 1st through 3rd in Portland, Oregon. That's the red line, because even if Jay Monahan were inclined to grant permission for players to go there, which he's not, he can't actually do that. The PGA Tour bylaws will not permit him to do that. And Tuesday of PGA Championship week, May 17th, is the deadline by which players have to request waivers for Portland. That's 45 days out from the event. And June 1st is 30 days out from the event, and that's the date by which the PGA Tour has to give those players an answer. So to me, that's the real red line, because ultimately, if a player chooses to sue over being denied the waiver to play in the United States against the PGA Tour schedule, if they choose to sue, well, then there's your trigger for eventually what could turn into an antitrust lawsuit.
Now, why is that? Because Portland is a domestic event versus London, which is overseas.
Yeah, the PGA Tour bylaws will not permit waivers to be granted to its members to play in events by other tours against their own schedule in the United States. And that's the week of the Canadian Open. The Canadian Open's up against the London event. But the Portland event is being held against the PGA Tour schedule. There will be no releases granted to that. And that's the point at which either players or some other entity can, perhaps the Saudis themselves, can try to launch a legal claim to adjudicate just how much control the PGA Tour can exact over the schedule of its members.
There's been some tough talk. There's been some bluster. Do you expect this to eventually become a situation where the courts ultimately get involved and we do see a lawsuit?
I do think it's ultimately going to head that way because oil grants the Saudis a lot of staying power here. And Greg Norman has been actually quite explicit in what the strategy is. He said the goal is to essentially fill his early tournaments with career journeymen and make elite players jealous. Because we've seen every elite player in the game at the top of the world rankings right now said they're not going to play these events, that they're remaining on the PGA Tour. And Greg Norman has said that if those guys start to see journeymen from Europe or the United States, a Robert Garrigues, for instance, earning a $4 million first place check, they're going to say that money should be coming to me. Yeah. And he's relying on that jealousy to drive players over time to get there. But it seems inevitable there's going to be some kind of litigation.
And now he has one of the most elite players in Phil Mickelson at a minimum asking for a release from the PGA Tour. Right now, I want to continue the conversation on Phil. We're joined by Todd Lewis in Vallarta, Mexico, at the Mexico Open. Todd, I know you caught up with John Rahm. What can you tell us?
Well, let's first talk about the connectivity that John Rahm has with Phil Mickelson. I want to go back to when John Rahm was competing at Arizona State. His coach then, his head coach of the golf team, Tim Mickelson, which is Phil's brother. And when John left Arizona State, actually Tim followed him and left Arizona State, left the coaching ranks there, and became John's agent. And Tim brought his brother Phil in because he noticed the talent to help guide John in his young career on the PGA Tour. And yes, Phil Mickelson had some influence on John Rahm. Now, John Rahm is playing here in the Mexico Open. He is the highest ranked player in the field. He would love to get a win in his last start prior to the PGA Championship. But I did get a chance to talk to him about Phil Mickelson and Phil's legacy. And I asked him a two-part question: what he thinks Phil's legacy should be and what he thinks his legacy will actually be.
I don't think what's happened recently should or will damage his legacy too much. The guy's given his life to golf. And a lot of what we have, a lot of people don't know that a lot of what we have, what we're competing for right now, is also thanks to him. A lot of people focus on Tiger, but he is easily top 10 best players of all time, right? He's a Hall of Famer, and we should recognize him as that. The guy has given his life to the public. Nobody's signed more autograph. Nobody's done more for the fans as well, right? So I know he's in a bit of a slump right now for whatever it may be, but again, I don't think his whole career and his whole legacy should change just because of a couple comments, right? Everybody makes mistakes, and everything can be rectified, and I believe that can happen, but it has to come from him as well.
And you think the public will see what Phil has done throughout his body of work more than what he's done recently?
I think if they start realizing everything he's done in his career since 95 or 94, whenever he started, actually he did start earlier, I think a lot of people would understand a little bit more of where he's coming from. But again, a little bit of what he did is because of some things he said, right? So I think, again, like I said, it needs to come from him. And like I said, I think everything can be rectified. Not everything, but this can be rectified.
We'll hear more about John Rahm playing in the Mexico Open and his chances here a little later on Golf Today. But in regards to Phil, yes, John brings up some great points. Phil has done some phenomenal things for the PGA Tour and the game of golf. But he has had some controversies along the way. In 2014, what he said about Tom Watson as the Ryder Cup captain, hitting a moving ball at Shinnecock at the U.S. Open, being investigated for insider trading by the FBI. During those moments, Phil was always good at controlling the narrative. Now, the statement that was released by Steve Loy yesterday, who, of course, is Phil's manager, leads me to think that, yes, they are trying to control the narrative again, and that Phil is likely going to, we're going to see him play over the next few months. And I would be surprised if we don't see him play over the next few months, given that statement that was released yesterday. Damon, the question is, where will he play first? Will he play the PGA Championship, where he's very proud to be the defending champion, or will he play in this alternative tour event in London? We're just going to have to wait and see.
What will Phil do next was the old ad campaign from the mid-2000s. We'll see what that answer is eventually. Great stuff from Todd Lewis. Much more from him in just a little bit.
Well, while Mickelson is thinking about his summer in London, it's spring break in Mexico for the PGA Tour. And the biggest name in the field you just heard from, Jon Rahm, hasn't had much reason to party lately. We'll talk about what makes a good week for him coming up.
Golf Today. Brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet, live your bet life. And WinGrips, the best grips in golf. And Bushnell Golf and the Pro XE, experience the best. And by introducing the Cobra King Forge Tech Irons, a better player's iron.
Back on Golf Today, the Mexico Open becomes an official event on the PGA Tour for the first time this year. Previously, the tournament had been part of the Korn Ferry Tour, the European Challenge Tour, and PGA Tour Latino America. Action gets underway Thursday at Vidanta Vallarta in Vallarta, Mexico. Speaking of which, right now, we're pleased to be joined once again by Todd Lewis from Vallarta with more on the world number two.
Yeah, Jon Rahm is the overwhelming favorite here at this tournament. And sure, Jon hasn't won since the U.S. Open last year, and he hasn't missed a cut since the Wells Fargo Championship, which was roughly a year ago as well. But in that period, 10 top 10s, including that victory at the U.S. Open. He's no longer number one in the world. Scottie Scheffler has been playing beautifully over the last few months and has overtaken Jon Rahm. But Rahm is still here, trying to compete, trying to get back to that winning form that he had last summer. I caught up with Jon earlier today, and I asked him why it was important for him to play in this event, the Mexico Open.
I could give you so many reasons. First one is because I wanted to. I heard a lot of good things about the resort, right? I've heard good things about the town, good things about the resort, good things about the golf course. I said, why not give it a try? I mean, we've seen the last few years what having more events can do in this country. You know, Carlos winning the PGA Tour event and Abraham as well, right? So I think it's important for the future generations. And, you know, we don't know how big of an impact we can have in a place like this. And hopefully it's a big one.
I'm definitely not implying you're playing poorly, so don't take it this way. But is winning right now the truest measurement of success for you?
Yes and no. It would be a tough sport if your self-worth as a player only comes from winning. Because up until recently, I was, the second winningest percentage-wise, and I was at 10%, right? So it's tough. It's tough out there. It's not easy to win. What Scottie's done is unbelievable. You see it every so often, right? Jordan Spieth and Jason Day did it in 2015. They kind of took parts, right? And he's had an incredible start to the year. So it obviously helps a lot, but there's more ways to improve than just winning, the sense of you can be improving as a player. I've seen plenty of interviews at 98 when Tiger was changing his swing after winning the Masters, and you know, he was getting questioned and he was saying, I'm playing better golf, you know, I'm playing better golf. And then he won eight times on 99 and nine times on 2000, right? So improvement can happen. It doesn't always show in the form of wins and stats, but as a feel as a player, you can get it. And I feel like in my career, we're so used to seeing me in the top 10 and seeing me contending every single week that every time I have 2 months of not playing my best golf, everybody puts me in doubt, right? I mean, I'm not a robot. I wish I was, but I'm not.
And do you have frustrations you have to manage when you're going through this period of the last few months like you've talked about?
No. It's golf. That's the best answer I can give you. It's this sport. It's golf, period. You can, one day you feel great, you hit all the right shots, and you have a great round. The next day you wake up, one eyelash is out of place, and nothing's happening, right? So the best answer I can give you is, in fact, that it's golf. And the same way things get cold, all of a sudden you can turn around and you start playing amazing golf, right? It is what it is.
Jon Rahm, as you can tell by that interview, not very frustrated in where his game is right now. He had a lot of media obligations today, and he went through them without any issues whatsoever. He was smiling along the way. Seems like he's having a great time so far early in the week here at the Mexico Open. And why wouldn't he be smiling? I mean, he leads the tour in strokes gained off the tee and in greens in regulation. His game from tee to green is phenomenal, and you could say the best on the PGA Tour. He is struggling on the greens, though, 132nd in strokes gained putting right now. That is a deficiency that he is very aware of. But if he can find a little bit of putting magic here this week, Damon and Eamon, then he can get some momentum in his next start, which would be the PGA Championship. Guys?
T-Lou down south of the border for us in Mexico. Jon Rahm looking for some heat, Eamon, as you see his recent results. Around the world, 12 events, couple of missed cuts, unlike him, four top 10 finishes, a couple top threes at T27 at the Masters, where he was a lot of people's favorite to win. Scottie Scheffler's great play notwithstanding. For more, we return to Paige McKenzie, who joins us after joining us yesterday as well. Paige, we appreciate the incredible gifts that Jon Rahm has, but it has been a season where he hasn't been playing the type of golf that he wants it. How do we define success for the former world number one at this point?
I define it a lot by listening to how he defines it, right? Because every player has their own expectation of where they feel like they should be, where their ceiling is. And it was so interesting. As I was listening to Todd's interview with Jon Rahm, I had previously written down, it's golf. And the fact that he's mentioning it, that's how I feel like his season is gone. Some holes are downwind, some holes are into the wind. And for right now, in the last several weeks, he's really been frustrated. If you listen to his press conferences from the Masters, from other events that have happened recently, he speaks to that. He says, I'm playing good. It's just I'm not getting the right bounces. I'm not getting the results that I want on the green. And for him, specifically on the greens in the last few events, it's been most frustrating. The last four events, he's had negative strokes gained putting. For this season, he's had four out of his eight events losing a half a shot on the green each day. That's a significant amount when you consider 50% of the tournaments are like that. Last season, only three of 17 starts were losing that kind of strokes on the green. So he's had some really rough events, and that can be frustrating for a player. But given his attitude, Damon, I'm not at all worried about the future. But certainly as it relates to the question, what's successful for him, I'm listening to him the entire time.
Yeah, I think he's got the right attitude, but it's got to be hard for someone when you've been number one in the world. I walked away from the Ryder Cup thinking he was the best player in the world, hands down, losing to Scottie Scheffler notwithstanding. I wonder, when you're 173rd in strokes gained around the greens, 132nd on the greens, when you're known for occasionally running a little bit hot, how do you keep that temper in check? Because you have to have a quiet mind when you're putting on the PGA Tour.
You do, and it was interesting listening to those comments to Todd Lewis, as though John is trying to almost convince himself that there are no frustrations, that, you know, he said yes and no when he was asked if winning is the only measure by which he's going to judge success. And, you know, that's a healthy attitude to have, but winning is still an important measure. And the reality is that Jon Rahm has won once in the last 603 days. And he needs to win more. Patrick Cantlay's won four times in that stretch. You know, Sam Burns has won three times. Rory McIlroy, who we talk about all the time, is not really being in sync with his swing right now, has won twice in that time. And Jon Rahm has won once in a year and a half. And that seems a poor return on an enormous talent and a man who has put himself in the mix time after time after time. And the struggles around and on the greens, that's more this season, I suppose, than historic. He was ranked 42nd in both strokes gained around the green and strokes gained putting last year. He's now outside the top 130 in both of those categories. So, there's going to be cause for frustration, but, you know, winning cures a lot, as Tiger used to say.
Yeah, Paige, it's golf, but is it also maybe underachieving as well?
It is, but I found it very interesting that I listen to Jon Rahm and I'm thinking, this is exactly what I hope and expect to hear from a player, that they can dismiss the struggles and move past it, knowing that it's just part of the ups and downs that come with playing this game at a professional level. Eamon, you seem to be upset that he's not, like, more frustrated with how things are going. I love that players do intentionally convince themselves, because that's part of the process. You have to speak to yourself in a kind way that gets you through it.
I miss the old John Rahm that had a little bit more visible
fire. Throwing club here and
there. I still think there's some in there. Yeah. You just don't see it as much, which is a good sign. You know, you got to be able to keep something approaching an even keel in this game.
It'll drive you crazy, but I think when you look at this player and his skill set and the way we were talking about him for a year plus, you have to win more. I think it's very difficult when you win a major championship and your profile changes. And as Todd Lewis said, you know, he has a lot of media to handle today. His profile is as high as it's ever been. And it's harder to get that second major championship. He's not even looking for a second major right now. He's just trying to win a golf tournament anywhere around the world.
And to be fair to John Rahm, he did have to withdraw from Memorial last year when he had a six-stroke lead, when he got a positive COVID test on the night of the third round. So, in fairness to him, he had a chance there. And obviously, he had a chance to win. He lost an epic playoff with Colin Morikawa as well last year. So, I think he's been really close. He's in the mix all the time, but he's just not quite getting over the finish line. That's not necessarily an indictment of John Rahm. It's also a testament to how difficult it actually is to win out there.
Incredibly thoughtful, by the way, I thought, in that interview with Todd Lewis, throwing out some metaphors and waking up with an eyelash out of place. You never know what this game can do to you. But John Rahm, the highest-ranked player in this field, looking to win for the first time in 2022. How about another Pac-12 legend? My fellow UCLA Bruin, a major champ in her own right, Patty Tavitanikit, joins us from California. She's getting ready to tee it up this week in Palos Verdes. Back on Golf Today. Lots to watch on Golf Channel. Golf Central at 4. I enjoyed it yesterday. Jimmy Roberts hosting this evening. Then a little later tonight, be sure to tune into Playing Lessons, 7 Eastern, featuring Jim Bones McKay and the 2021 Chevron Championship winner, Patty Tavitanikit. Here's a sneak peek.
All right, Patty, great drive here.
Thank you.
Trusty laser tells us we've got 155 total, 140 to carry. We got a lot going on here. We got wind, we got water, we got flowers. Talk to us here about your expectations.
Flowers.
Yeah, such a tough hole location. How much are you going to bite off here? What would you, you know, talk to your caddy about in terms of your line and taking things out of play?
Mainly, I just want to keep this ball right at the hole. That's just our number one goal, whatever I do. And I'm just like making scenarios of when I'm over the ball, do I see it being like a straight kind of falling left shot or just a nice hold, making sure it's not going left. And I see that one better. It's actually my go-to shot. Like, I don't like working the ball right to left. If anything, I like working the ball left to right.
Let's see it.
Okay, 155.
What do you think the total's playing with this kind of hurt?
Hurt and hold, probably at least 65.
Okay.
So again, 6 iron here.
Oh, perfectly executed. Flighted, hold, into the right to left wind. Perfect club selection. Getting better.
Come.
Well done.
Thank you.
Patty T likes the butter cut. I like the butter cut. And the major champion, UCLA Bruin, joins us now. Patty, so being on TV is nothing new for you as a major champion. What was it like being on TV in this format? You're taping segments and chit-chat with Bones.
I actually loved it. I feel like, you know, I really get to really talk about what I'm comfortable talking about, which is golf and seeing my shots, explaining things in details, which I think a lot of the fans didn't really get to see that when they watch us on the broadcast because we're just so focused on, you know, playing and we never get a chance to really explain what is going on in our heads.
Patty, the statistics would suggest you're pretty much in control of your game at either end of the hole. You're second on tour in putting, and you're one of the longest hitters out there, 11th in driving distance on the tour. What, in your mind, has most improved in your game, and what are you actually still working on?
You know, I feel like a lot of us girls out here could say it too, that we always somewhat work on our swings, and, you know, there's always something that we could work on when we're hitting. But I would say I think my iron shots has improved a lot since last year. And so as, you know, like more shots on the course and just working ball left to right, right to left, flighting it, control. And just overall, I feel like, you know, when you are comfortable with your longer game, you don't really feel the need to hit it close. And then it's just give your sense of security to be on the putting green and putt freely. So I think that's why my putting stats has been really good as well.
Patty T, you are the elite of the elite, one of the best golfers on the planet. What are the challenges of explaining this crazy game to the 15, 20 handicapper at home who's looking for that magic bullet to kind of solve the unsolvable game of golf?
I would say, you know, when I'm explaining stuff, I always put myself in other people's shoes. And so if I were to put myself in that position, I would probably think it, or like thinking it, way more simple than what I do now, just because, you know, like we play competitive golf every week. The course setup, the pin locations and all that stuff is way tougher than what you would get as a weekend golfer. But I would say, I mean, getting that point, just trying to put the ball in position and keeping it in play, I would say, is the most important thing. And then, you know, like keeping it fun is probably one of the best things in golf. I still try to keep it fun out there when I'm out playing.
Let's move on to the golf you're actually working on this week. This is a new tournament on the LPGA schedule, but it's not a new golf course for you, right?
No, I've played this course when I was in college at UCLA. We would go out and practice out there here and there, but we played a tournament, I think Ohio State hosted at Palos Verdes. And then I played Pac-12 there as well. Pac-12 Championship was there. USC hosted it. And so, you know, I've been around this course. I know it fits my eyes, and it's just, you know, a sense of being home and comfortable.
Yeah, speaking of being home, how are you handling having gone to UCLA, dealing with ticket requests these last couple of weeks? Folks maybe wanting to hang out with you, have dinner while you're trying to have a couple of, you know, kind of quiet weeks of work.
Actually, it's been on a really good side because, you know, when you're out on the golf course, don't get me wrong, but you see the same faces every week. And so sometimes it's really nice to just take a break from all that and then see other people, see other friends that you haven't seen in a while. And I think that really just helped my spirit of the week just really get it going and just be, you know, positive in general.
All right, I want to finish where we started with this playing lesson, 7 p.m. tonight on Golf Channel. Sometimes crazy things happen during playing lessons. You know, someone holes out a shot, or maybe you actually discover something as you're explaining it that helps your own game, or the host keeps tripping over his or her words and has to, like, redo a take 10 times. What's the craziest thing that happened with you and Bones?
I would say the craziest thing was I think I just got out of, like, you know, my break and off season, and then they asked me to do it with new equipments and everything. And that particular day was like a really cold day in Orlando. And so everything just adds on top of it. And I having like to hit probably 5 shots to get the one that they want to broadcast it. So just keeping it real here, guys. I did not take one take to hit those shots.
Even the pros struggle sometimes.
There's hope for the rest of us, Damon.
For the 20 handicappers as well. Patty T, thanks for your time. Best of luck this week in Palos Verdes. Hope to speak to you soon.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, guys.
The PGA Tour heads south of the border for the Mexico Open. Last year, Alvaro Ortiz won the title when it was a PGA Latino America event. This year, he's defending against some of the best players in the world. Steve Stricker famously won the PGA Tour's Comeback Player of the Year award twice in back-to-back years. He's making another comeback this week, returning to the PGA Tour Champions after being sidelined with a mystery illness for more than 6 months. And the LPGA Tour moves from Wilshire Country Club, 20 miles south, to Palos Verdes. That's about 3 hours in LA traffic. So while the players are sitting on the 405, we'll talk about the newest star in the women's game who's teeing it up. Hour two of Golf Today starts now.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet.
Another golf today. Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch of Golf Week magazine. I couldn't help but chuckle as you said 3 hours of L.A. traffic, because you're not wrong. I grew up in the 70s and 80s, and the traffic was bad then. Now when I go home and visit my mom and my sister, it's horrible, the 405. I was chuckling as you said it. You nailed it. 3 hour traffic from Wilshire to Palos Verdes. That's no exaggeration.
Well, what's worse for you, Damon? Northeast winters or Southern California traffic? You got to choose one, man.
Well, both affect my golf game negatively. I miss a tee time in LA because I'm sitting on the 405, and then I miss 3, 4 months, 5 months sometimes of golf because winter seems to linger here. Is this New England or New York, by the way? Have you come to grips with where we are in Connecticut? Because some people say it's like Patriots, Red Sox country, and some people say, no, it's Yankees and Giants and Mets country.
I don't trifle with all of those other sports,
Damon.
To me, it's just there's New York and then there's the rest of the world, really.
I understand. Well, speaking of the rest of the world, the PGA Tour has a new event this week in Mexico. Abraham Answer, Carlos Ortiz, trying to raise the victory flag for their home country as the Mexico Open, which actually dates to the 1940s, becomes an official PGA Tour event for the first time in 2022. Previously, the tournament had been part of the Korn Ferry Tour, the European Challenge Tour, and PGA Tour Latino America. Take a look at some of the players from Mexico competing in the Mexico Open. Abe Answer, winner on the PGA Tour. The brothers, Carlos Ortiz and Alvaro as well. Hope to speak to Alvaro in just a little bit. With more from Vallarta, let's welcome back Todd Lewis. T. Lou, how is Mexico embracing this new PGA Tour event?
With great open arms, it's great to have this tournament here in a new part of the world of Mexico. And the PGA Tour was very adamant in trying to keep this tournament in Mexico and elevate it to an exclusive PGA Tour event. It wasn't just the PGA Tour here at work. There were a couple other factors, including Grupo Vedanta, which is a hotel and resort company here in Mexico. As a matter of fact, the property behind me where the course will be played is part of Grupo Vedanta. It was them along with Grupo Salinas. Now, the Salinas family was the title sponsor of the WGC Mexico Championship when it was held in Mexico City from 2017 to 2020. So those groups coming together and working in harmony with the PGA Tour to help elevate the game of golf here in Mexico. And it is trending in a positive direction, especially with Mexican winners on the PGA Tour like Abraham Answer and Carlos Ortiz. I've seen first team members from the Mexico Puerto Vallarta chapter walking around here. It's not as public a sport as you would see in the United States. There aren't as many munis here. It's mostly a private sport, a private club sport, I should say. But gates are starting to open to get players in, especially young kids, to start to grow the game. And having this tournament here and the commitment that both of those groups and the PGA Tour have made for the next 3 years to have this tournament here at Puerto Vallarta at the Mexico Open, well, that hopefully will help that as well, Damon.
Well, Todd, it's an old tournament, the Mexico Open, with a pretty rich history, and it's a new stop on the PGA Tour, but it's also a new venue for guys. What can you tell us about the golf course?
Well, it's interesting. You know, you, by the way, Eamon, you're very public with your golf game and the struggles you've had. You would have quite a tough time on this golf course. There's a lot of water here. I mean, there are lakes and ponds. There's a river that is part of this golf course as well. There are 106 bunkers on the property, so you got that to consider. And as far as length goes, I mean, it's not a short course. It's not a super long course, but it's kind of beefy, just over 7,400 yards on the scorecard. And this is a par 71. Five par threes on the golf course, so that's something that's interesting. There's a drivable par four, the seventh hole, that's just under 300 yards, and there's still four par fives, including the finishing hole here. And I don't know about you guys, but I like a par five finishing hole. That brings a lot of drama into the competition. However, there are very wide areas off the tee for these players to land their ball, so they shouldn't have any problems off the tee. And as we have seen over the last decade or so, these guys are so good. They're going to figure out this golf course pretty well. It should be a lot of fun to watch here at the Mexico Open.
I like a par 5 finishing hole as well. Don't so much like the 106.
Not with your current
bunkers.
Issues that you've got, Damon. I thought that was cruel for Todd to bring that up.
Yeah, that was a gut punch. T. Lou,
no,
down south of the border.
I know you could. Someday, possibly, you can navigate your way through all those bunkers and water. Right, Eamon?
There's still time. There's still time for me, hopefully. Knock on some wood. Todd Lewis, breaking it all down for us at the Mexico Open. And speaking of breaking it down, there's a lot of golf to watch this week on Golf Channel. You got the Women's NCAA Regionals Selection Show. That's tomorrow, the Catalunya Championship from Spain on DP World Tour, the Mexico Open. You got the Palos Verdes Championship on the LPGA. And then the Insperity Invitational, Steve Stricker back on PGA Tour Champions. So it's time now to state your case for a player who needs this week the most. Who needs this week, Eamon Lynch?
How could it not be John Rahm in my mind? And it's not just that John hasn't won in a year and a half other than the one US Open victory in that time frame. This is a field that John Rahm ought to dominate. With all due respect to the field here, it's not the strongest one we've seen this year. A lot of guys are on a break, post-Masters, starting to ramp it up then within the next couple of weeks for the PGA Championship. John's the only one in the top 10 in the world in the field. There are six of the top 50, but there are only two of the top 30 in the FedEx Cup rankings in the field. I think John Rahm is presented here with a perfect opportunity to make a statement this week and just remind people that why he spent so long at the top of the world rankings. It seems like a perfect opportunity if, but obviously things have to fall his way. There are no mugs in the field here. They're all there for a reason. They're all capable of winning this tournament. But to me, it seems like the event that John Rahm has the most to prove.
I like how you're thinking. I know golf isn't other sports, but the 9-3 football team should beat the 3-9 football team. You know, Roger Federer should beat the qualifier, you know, playing for the first time on a big stage. I like how you're thinking. Do you think he's up for it with that putter still looking for some heat?
Well, the putter is, Teddy used a wonderful phrase there, Teddy Greenstein, whimsical.
Yeah.
But sometimes the whimsical nature of a putter can last for quite a while. And Rahm has seen a significant drop-off. And that's unusual for him because he's been a consistently good putter for most of his career. If you go back just two seasons on the PGA Tour, he was 22nd in strokes gained putting. So going down to 44th isn't a particularly significant drop. Going to 132nd where he is now, that's more significant. But to his comments to Todd earlier, things can turn around pretty quickly in this game. The putting is one of those things where if he gets hot, then tee to green, no one hits it better off the tee than John Rahm in this game, and no one hits more greens on the PGA Tour than John Rahm. So all he needs is the putter to cooperate, and he could really make that statement.
John Rahm needs a hot putter. So does Tony Finau, who hasn't got a top 10 in a regular PGA Tour event since he won in the playoffs, and he got a seventh place finish at the Hero short field. You know, hit and giggle with Tiger's buddies, which is fine. You know,
so why haven't the floodgates opened then? That was what everyone said. When Tony starts to win, the floodgates will open.
He had all those top 10s. They called him top 10 Tony. And now he can't even find a top 10 finish. I know he's working on some things. I think also that was an exhale moment for him when he finally got that second win after winning in Puerto Rico in 2016 and finally winning again on the PGA Tour. The thought was now he's going to take off, and he just hasn't. And this was someone who was once one of the most consistent players on the PGA Tour. And it's been a struggle.
Well, it's been 8 months that he's been exhaling then, if it is an
exhale
moment, ever since he won the Northern Trust out at Liberty National. And he won it in tremendously dramatic fashion in the playoff. But he's, for a guy who had put himself in the mix week after week for so long, to even the point where recreational or transient sports fans could recognize Tony Finau because he was getting so much airtime on a Sunday afternoon, He's missing in action.
He is. I'll never forget when Kobe Bryant passed away and Tony did that wonderful kind of homage, you know, with his shoes out at the WM Phoenix Open and talked about trying to adopt that kind of Kobe mentality. Do you think that Tony will ever kind of get there? I know golf's different than basketball, but he is trying to get to a place where he is an elite of the elite. And I just wonder, you know, does he have the horsepower off the tee? Yes, but is he too nice? I mean, where do you see Tony kind of fitting in with these, you know, velociraptors in the game like John Rahm and Scottie Scheffler in a quiet way?
I think there are a lot of tiers on the PGA Tour, and the John Rahms of the world belong in the A-plus tier. And the A tier has a guy to me like Tony Finau in there. And, you know, he is an elite player. He's a winner here. He's a proven winner on the PGA Tour. Puts himself in the mix all the time. The problem Tony has is by putting himself in the mix so often and winning so seldom, he doesn't scare anyone on Sunday. I don't think the other players on the PGA Tour who are going up against Tony on Sunday afternoon, they recognize his talent and his ability to win, but they're not going into a showdown with Tony Finau, the way they're going to go into a showdown with a Jordan Spieth or a Kepka or someone else who is a proven closer time and time again. There is that little bit of doubt that associated with Tony Finau, and that's grist for the mill of his opponents, and I think it can be potentially corrosive for Tony himself.
I wasn't sure where you were going with tears, i.e., or there's also a lot of T-E-A-R-S as well sometimes on the PGA Tour. Paige, how about for you? State your case for a player who needs this week.
I'm going a little bit of a different direction, and I'm going to say Anirban Lahiri. And the reason that I'm zeroing in on him is because of President's Cup come September. Currently sitting 11th on the point standings, he's outside the automatic qualifiers, but he's definitely in the mix for a captain selection. And given his runner-up finish at the Players, and he followed that up with a tied for 13th the following week, he certainly is on the radar. But I believe he needs to show some consistency before he's going to get that selection. And given the fact that he's missed a handful of cuts early in the season, I think he needs to show that he's week in and week out a name to pay attention to. There's a lot of big names behind him. There's a Mark Leishman. There's an Adam Hadwin. There's other players that likely are on Immelman's radar as well. And for Lahiri to separate himself, I think he needs a good week here. I think you guys have brought up the point that the field is relatively weak. And this is an opportunity for him to make a statement if he can post some good numbers.
Yeah, trying to kind of carry that momentum from that runner-up finish at the Players' Championship. All right, folks, speaking of the Mexico Open, after the break, we're joined by Alvaro Ortiz, who actually won this event in 2021 when it was a part of the PGA Tour Latino America schedule. More on the importance of this week when Golf Today returns.
Golf Today, brought to you by PointsBet. This season, don't just bet, live your bet life. And the new Ping PLD putters, designed by pros, played by champions, custom built for you. And by Skechers Go Golf, comfort-driven styles worn by Billy Andre.
Back on Golf Today in 2019, Alvaro Ortiz came away with the trophy at the Latin America Amateur Championship, becoming the first and only Mexican player to take home that prestigious title. Played in the Masters in 2019 and finished tied for 36th. What a fantastic moment. 2021, we fast forward. Ortiz teed up in the Mexico Open on the PGA Tour Latino America, entered the final round 5 shots off the lead, but shot a 9-under-63. Win by 3, and the win marked his first professional victory. Yeah, it's a nice tap in putt. That's how to do it. Take a look at the bio. Currently playing on the Korn Ferry Tour. 7 career starts in the PGA Tour. Won that 2021 Mexico Open as a PGA Tour Latino America event. Older brother Carlos, winner on the PGA Tour. So Alvaro in the field this week at the Mexico Open and joins us now. It's great to spend some time with you. You won the Mexico Open last year on PGA Tour Latino America. Different golf course, but what kind of positive vibes are you carrying this week?
Oh, so many of them. I think this tournament is super special for us Mexicans. You don't get to play your country's Open every single time, so super excited to be here. Super close at home. Guadalajara is just a 30-minute, 45-minute flight from here. And just such a special week to have my family and my friends and also to share it with my brother.
Alvaro, what was your reaction when you found out that the Mexico Open was going to become a PGA Tour event? Did you worry that it was going to make it harder to defend your title?
A little bit. I'm a little nervous about it, but hey, it's a great opportunity. And like I said, it's just so close to home that it just feels like, man, I have so many memories from my childhood. We came here since I'm like 4 or 3 years old. So I think it's just a great venue, and I'm super excited about it.
Yeah, let's talk about that family dynamic. Your brother, you mentioned, Carlos, is in the field. What do you have planned in terms of practice rounds or living arrangements, dinners? Kind of take us through your week.
So basically every single tournament that we played together so far, we've tried to, you know, play some practice rounds together, basically every single one. We don't get to play as often as we would like to. So we played 9 holes yesterday, 9 holes today. and we play in the Pro-Am tomorrow. He's actually playing in the first nine with the group, and then I'm taking over in the back nine. And over the course of this week, actually, we're having his birthday dinner. It was on Sunday, he turned 31, and today we're having a dinner for him, all a bunch of players, a bunch of friends. They're coming over tonight, and it's going to be a great dinner. Unfortunately, we won't be able to drink and celebrate the right way, but there'll be time for that.
Alvaro, we mentioned you won the Latin American Amateur, you played in the Masters, and right after that, you turned professional, and then the pandemic hit, which kind of was rough sailing for everyone. How did that impact your progress, and where are you now in terms of your professional career?
Well, to be honest, yeah, it was super weird when I turned pro. I got a couple exemptions and didn't go my way. Started from the bottom in P2 Latin America, and I think we played 1 week, and then it was when the pandemic hit, and it was just a weird year. But to be honest, I actually loved it. It said a lot of stuff in my life. It was great for me, and I feel like it put me in the right path. Right now, I'm in the Corn Ferry, super excited to be playing my first season there. And it's been a little tough. There's so many good players out there. It's a great tour. So, but at the same time, it's super long. You know, there's so much of it left. And hopefully, I'll be here next year, as a full member of the PGA Tour.
Yeah. On that note, everyone in your profession wants to make it to the PGA Tour or the LPGA Tour with your brother Carlos already there. What kind of advice is he giving you along the path in this journey?
It's sometimes depends on kind of like the weeks that I'm at, but most of the times he just gives me the advice to be patient. You know, golf is just I feel like it's a different sport, and truly the fact that you don't peak until you're like 30 something, it's just hard to put it into perspective. But that's the advice that he's giving me: just be patient, keep working, keep at it, and just trust the process. I think at the end of the day, the hard work pays off, and that's all I'm trying to do so far.
All right, Alvaro. Todd Lewis, TV's Todd Lewis, just came on the program and said there are 106 bunkers at Vedanta Vallarta. How would you describe the difficulty of the test this week?
I think it's a bomber's paradise, to be honest. I played it before they redid it, and I was really surprised with how long it is now. It's in perfect conditions. It's immaculate. I think they've done a great job out here. You'll see it during this weekend. It's as green as it can get. And it's just a very long golf course. It's very tough around the greens. And I think it will reward a great short game. To be honest, around the greens, there's a lot of undulation. There's, like you said, it's a lot of bunkers. But to be honest, I think the guy who does the best from tee to green will probably get the job done this week.
Now, Alvaro, we've seen the PGA Tour in Mexico over the last few years, but that was a limited field WGC event. This is the first open tournament on the PGA Tour in Mexico. What does it represent for Mexican golfers to have the PGA Tour on a home game?
It's unbelievable for us, to be honest. There's, I think, 10 Mexicans in the field this week, and there's, like, I think, half of them are making their debut. So it just talks about how much it's doing for our country and then the game. It's just growing. And I don't think just Mexico, but over Latin America, you know. All the countries and all the Latin American friends are starting to notice how much the game is growing. And it's starting to show. There's so many Latin American players now in the PGA Tour. They're succeeding. I mean, Joaco just won one of the best tournaments a couple months ago in Riviera. And I mean, it's awesome. We're loving it, and hopefully it just keeps growing this way.
Well, Alvaro, best of luck in your title defense. I hope you're allowed at least a sip of cerveza at your brother's birthday party, and we will speak to you soon.
Awesome. Thank you so much, guys.
Well, over on the LPGA Tour, it's a new tournament this week, too. But the course will be pretty familiar for a lot of the players in the field. Paige McKenzie explains next.
Golf Central Update, brought to you by Callaway Golf.
Folks, this week marks the second straight event in Los Angeles for the LPGA Tour. Palos Verdes Golf Club plays host to the Palos Verdes Championship. This venue now is an ocean view course designed in 1924 by George Thomas and his assistant, Billy Bell. George Thomas, of course, of Riviera fame. Fantastic gems like Bel Air Country Club as well. A lot of fantastic golf in the area. Take a look at the notables in the field. World number one, Rolex rankings, Jin Young Ko, looking for a bounce back. Look at the player with the A next to her name. That, of course, Anna Davis earlier in the month, a 16-year-old from San Diego, won the Augusta National Women's Amateur. High school sophomore, carded the final round 69 to win by one shot. She was the only player to finish in red figures. She also created quite a stir in fashion circles with that bucket hat and also her fun jousting with twin brother Billy. She has received a sponsor's exemption into this week's field and just met the media.
I think it's pretty cool. I didn't expect to play an LPGA event at such a young age. So and it's very exciting. It's been one of my goals for a really long time. So,
and grew up just down the road in San Diego. Had you ever been up to this golf club before? Are you familiar at all?
I've not. This is my first time in LA, actually.
So. Oh, really?
Yeah.
So have you done anything fun since it's your first time in this area?
No, not really. Not yet. Sit in traffic. That's fun.
So let's just kind of talk about some of your accomplishments this year. You won the Girls Junior PGA Championship. Mm-hmm. Last year you played on the US Junior Solheim Cup team. Mm-hmm. You're a name that people know, but I think ANWA was kind of your breakthrough moment. What did that win mean to you? And what has it changed your life at all? Or are you just, people know more about you now?
Yeah, for sure. I think it's definitely changed my life a little bit. Just going back, it's like so many people have contacted me and stuff like that. I've gotten so many opportunities because of it, and I'm very thankful for that. So
what are some of the emotions being out here? I know you said it was cool to be out here to be your first LPGA Tour event, but what are you feeling like being here?
I'm not that nervous. I'm kind of just trying to treat it as any other event. I'm just trying to have fun out here.
Awesome. So we'll head to the Zoom. It looks like Beth Ann, if you could unmute yourself.
Yes. Hello. Congratulations, Anna, it was fun watching you win in Augusta. I wanted to just ask, first of all, what the reaction was like at high school when you went back to normal life.
Okay, so I'm online school, so it wasn't like too crazy, but all of my friends were texting me, and some of them aren't golfers, so they don't really understand like how big it is, but some of them were like, oh, congratulations. And like my family also, like some of them don't understand like how big it was. So it's kind of funny.
Awesome. Is there anyone this week that you particularly wanted to meet or play with on the LPGA?
Not really. I think I've met a few of them when I was at Solheim. I met like the USA team. That was fun. I've met like the Corda sisters. Those are like my two main ones. I don't think they're playing this week though.
And then if I could ask about college, kind of where are you in the process for college, and has it changed much at all since the ANWA?
I think ever since last summer, I've been pretty like well known with the college coaches, I would say, but I don't know. We'll see in June how the recruitment process takes place. So
how many schools are you looking at?
I'm not really sure. I've never really had like a dream school, and I haven't visited any. So I think that will take obviously that's a really important decision. And so we'll see what takes place in the next 2 years.
And then just one more, I'm curious what your reaction was to the bucket hat craze and how much attention and conversation that sparked.
It was kind of funny. Back in July at the girls PGA, It was like kind of a big thing, not as big as it is now, but it was kind of like my thing. And then during like the fall and winter, I didn't wear one. But they're kind of back in season. So I guess I put one on, and then all of a sudden it got a bunch of attention. So I don't know. It's funny.
Well, we see one this week.
Yes, for sure. I have some new ones.
Thank goodness, hardly recognized her without the bucket hat. Time now for news and notes with our own Paige McKenzie. So we just heard from our Augusta National Women's Amateur champ. She's getting ready for LPGA debut. What are your impressions of this teen phenom?
Well, it's very obvious she's still a teenager, which I think is refreshing to see and to hear from somebody so young taking in this experience. But I think that's exactly what she should be doing this week, is taking it all in. I think when we see Augusta National Women's Amateur, we obviously see accomplished collegiate players that we expect to then turn pro. That's not the case here. I remember talking to some of the college coaches that was at the Augusta National Women's Amateur supporting their players, actually trying to recruit Anna and keeping an eye on what her game was going to look like. So for her this week, I think my expectations are low, but obviously she's got a very solid game, one of the highest recruited players coming out of high school already prior to even having won the Augusta National Women's Amateur.
Well, Paige, Anna is playing the Palos Verdes Championship on a sponsor invite, but she's probably not the only sponsor's invite that's catching your eye, is she?
She's not. In fact, there's a couple other players that have caught my eye in Rachel Keene from Wake Forest and Andrea Lee, who was formerly playing for Stanford. And the reason why I'm putting their college names beside their actual name is because there's a great collegiate event that has played host at Palos Verdes for the last 26 years. It's the Northrop Grumman Regional Challenge. And Ohio State has hosted this. You heard from Patty Tavitanicat earlier referring to this event. So a large number of players have played in that event, and both Rachel Keene and Andrea Lee are former champions. Andrea winning it in 2019 and Rachel winning it this year in March. And they awarded the LPGA sponsor invite to the winner of that event. So two very accomplished players on this golf course that we're going to see again this week.
Well, Paige, speaking of that college event, you have some notable past champions playing this week. Who are you looking at?
I'm keeping an eye on, in particular, Leona McGuire, but it's produced a great list of past champions going back to, as I mentioned, this event has been played since 1996. You've got Catherine Kirk, Carlota Segondo, who played for ASU. A lot of the Pac-12 teams participated. Annie Park, Bronte Law of USC, UCLA. Leona McGuire played for Duke. I'm keeping an eye on her just because she's 40-1 this week, which I feel like is pretty long odds for a player that's already won on the LPGA Tour and has won at this golf course just a handful of years ago. And also, not only is there all of these past champions, I talked to Jim Gormley, the head pro, and he said there's 35 players in the field that he counted that had previously participated in this event. So nearly a quarter of the field has seen this golf course in tournament conditions before. So that's probably maybe the largest number in the field that's ever played a first-time LPGA event venue.
Paige, you mentioned the head pro, Jim Gormley. What did he tell you about the course and the setup and the challenge this week?
He said the challenge on this golf course is almost always the wind and the uneven lies. It is built on the side of a hill, so there's very, very few flat lies around this golf course. And the forecast is expected to be between 10 and 15 miles of wind every day, and that's going to play an impact on this golf course. I also was one of those Pac-12/Pac-10 players back in my day that had participated at this event, and I vividly remember the difficulty around the greens as well. So I think that's going to play into a challenge for the women as they play this golf course.
It's the Pac-10 or Pac-12 player, Pac-12 legend, Paige McKenzie. How's the walk, by the way? You talked about kind of the undulations. I mean, we just talked about the course in Mexico, 106 bunkers. How would you describe the difficulty, kind of maybe tee to green?
Yeah, for me, I remember playing it and really feeling like the more you played it, the more you understood it. There's a couple of short par fours that really is about positioning off of the tee. There's a very steep par four that has a blind approach into the green. So there is some advantage to have seen this golf course many times. I struggled in particular on the putting green. I vividly remember four putting the ninth hole, not to put that image in anybody's mind. So I think in all, I think people really need to do their homework on this golf course. It's not as straightforward as maybe you'd expect for an older style golf course. There are some certain advantages to understanding the angles on this golf course.
Fantastic advice for the best players in the world in the LPGA. Thank you very much, Paige McKenzie.
Thanks, guys.
Welcome back to Golf Today. It's Tuesday, so that means it's time for trivia. You know, Eamon, I love, like, Family Feud and Wheel of Fortune, but today we're drawing inspiration from really one of the world's most famous game shows, I think. Let's take a look at what happened last week on Jeopardy. This is not to be missed.
A golf course.
Golf course two.
Keep your eye on this, one under par on a hole. Alex.
What is a birdie?
You got it.
400.
Those drives are going everywhere but the fairway. Time to improve them by teeing it up at this practice area. Matea.
What is the driving range?
Yes.
Golf course 6.
It's the three-letter word for the spot where a golfer's ball has come to rest. Megan.
What is a lie?
You are correct. Back on the plus side.
Golf course 800, please.
From an old Scots word, it means both a piece of turf dug out by a club on a swing and the resulting hole. Megan.
What is a divot?
That's it.
And 1,000, please.
Final clue. A right-hander's shot that moves slightly from left to right is called this, a synonym for gradually disappear. Megan.
What is fade?
That's correct.
And in the spirit of Jeopardy, we thought it'd be fun to do a little Tuesday trivia. Our ace researcher will now be the host, Alex Levine. So, Alex, take it away.
Masters champion Scottie Scheffler won the Big 12 championship on this venue that he once said was probably my favorite golf course.
Mm. Got it? I do too, but you go first. I defer.
What is Southern Hills?
What is Southern Hills? Oh, nice. All right, we're good. We're off and running.
Off and running.
He recently became the 11th player to surpass $50 million in career earnings on the PGA Tour.
I'll take this one first. Who is Jordan Spieth?
I'm going to go Jordan Spieth as well. This one's a little easy.
All right. Hey, we're rolling.
A fall series first-time winner, he was childhood friends in Oklahoma with Phillies catcher JT Realmuto, and he played his first PGA Tour event the same week in 2014 that Realmuto made his Major League Baseball debut.
Wow. I'm thinking it's either Ryan Brem or Chad Ramey. What do you got? Who is?
I don't think that was a fall series event. I'm going to go who is Sam Burns. Could be Max Homa, but...
Taylor Gooch! Yeah. The Gooch! Oh, well. I like Taylor Gooch, and I'm embarrassed. Wow. Sorry, Gooch.
The number of players with at least 20 career wins on the PGA Tour after Rory McIlroy won for the 20th time at the 2021 CJ Cup.
After you, Damon.
What is 23?
I think it's a lot more than that. I want to say it's like, I'm going to say 40.
39!
Hey, that gets me half a point.
It's a bigger table than I thought, but yeah, you should get half a point.
After finishing tied for 9th, this former winner of the Honda Classic waited around in the rain near the 18th green at PGA National to watch his former college roommate, Sepp Straka, win for the first time on tour.
I'm going to say who is Russell Henley.
I'm going to go with... Well, Ricky Fowler normally waits behind the 18th green to see folks.
But he went to OSU.
He did. I'll go with Henley as well. I think you're right.
Oh, Mitchell! Oh, my gosh! Oh, man! We did okay. I thought Alex Levine, our ace research, did a fantastic job at those questions.
Well, I don't think Keith Mitchell is going to be liking us very much.
How did we miss that? Keith Mitchell, winner on the PGA Tour. This is a Tuesday, by the way, as we know. There's no sleepy days in golf anymore. We got news with Phil. John Rahm needs a big week. Where's your mind as we wrap up this show?
I think the focus now is going to shift to the actual action this week. Yeah. We're getting closer and closer to the balls in the air. On all of these tours, Phil's going to dominate the headlines for the next sort of weeks and months here as we figure out what's actually happening, who's likely to go and play these Saudi events, both overseas and in the United States. But it's going to be a contentious couple of months coming up.
Yeah, it is. I'm glad there's news to talk about. I'm most excited about the action inside the ropes, on the course. He's Eamon. I'm Damon. We are back on Wednesday. Have a great day.